Welcome to the daily full show podcast of the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
The Power Station.
This is Ray Hadley in the Morning, right across Australia.
Good morning and welcome. Thursday, the 21st of May. I'm Ray Hadley. Great to have you company on 2GB, 2CC, 4BC and stations on the Macquarie Regional, Southern Cross and Capital Radio Networks. Top of 20 in the city of Sydney, same out west, 26 in Brisbane. And we'll check the weather across the rest of the listening area shortly. And no matter where you are listening, the number is 131873. Email me either rayhadley.com, 2gb.com, 4bc.com.au, and access information from the program by going to facebook.com/the Ray Hadley Morning Show. Headline says it all. A Royal Commission into the abuse of children. Pell tried to silence me. Cardinal George Pell allegedly tried to bribe the nephew of a notorious paedophile, Gerald Ridsdale, to keep him quiet about the abuse at the hands of his uncle, it's been alleged. David Ridsdale told the Royal Commission into Child Sexual Abuse yesterday he phoned Pell in 1993 to tell him about the abuse. He said Pell asked what would it take for him to keep quiet about the abuse. Mr. Ridsdale responded, "F you, George, and everything you stand for." Mr. Ridsdale said the conversation by phone took place a month before Pell controversially supported Ridsdale in court when he pleaded guilty to a string of abuse charges. Hundreds, if not thousands, of children were abused because of this priest, and that's why I could never understand why George Pell stood alongside him as he entered court that day and alongside him as he pleaded guilty. Cardinal Pell has denied trying to bribe a victim of paedophile priest Gerald Ridsdale to keep quiet. In a statement from the Vatican late last night, Cardinal Pell acknowledged he'd been accused of being complicit in the moving of a known paedophile, of ignoring victims' complaints and of bribery. But he said he would never have condoned or participated in a decision to transfer Ridsdale in the knowledge he'd abused children, and he did not do so. He says it's important to correct the record, particularly given the false and misleading headlines. Well, there's one way to solve this, Cardinal. Get yourself back here. Come back from the Vatican and let you be examined, cross-examined by counsel assisting the Royal Commission on the accusations against you. And maybe the question should be put to you, why on that day did you accompany this creature into court knowing he was pleading guilty to the abuse of children? What did you know at the time in Ballarat and other places about the abuse of children? Seems strange that a man who's prepared to put his name to all of this in David Ridsdale would manufacture this particular story. And just on this, and I've mentioned this many, many, many times, we have one person to thank for this Royal Commission. We've agitated it for years, and it will be her legacy among not many legacies. Julia Gillard was then Prime Minister and said this had to happen. And many other Prime Ministers ignored this. She didn't. So well done to her. We're knowing all this because of her intervention. There are other aspects of her Prime Ministership that were lamentable. This is not one of them. Now, this young bloke from Townsville, Oliver Bridgman, he's contacted his parents on the internet to assure them that while he's in the area controlled by terrorists, he's not taken up arms. He's denied fighting in the conflict. It's understood he stressed he travelled to the war-torn region to perform humanitarian work and helping out at orphanages and performing manual labour. He voiced concerns about his safety after undertaking the journey. I mean, he's only 18. He's still a boy, even though he's 18 and of age. And I know people say, well, hang on, there were 18-year-olds going to fight at Gallipoli. But that was then, this is now. Like many of you, I'm sick to the back teeth. Sick to the back teeth of everyone that goes there, of saying, oh, I'm here, I'm a nurse. I'm not a jihadist. I'm over here helping the oppressed and all this. Now, following on from our interview yesterday, the Australians got a follow-up. Second-generation Australians involved in terrorism face being stripped of their citizenship, along with dual nationals, as part of the Abbott government's efforts to tighten national security laws. So it goes one step further than Andrew Nikolic explained to us yesterday. the deputy whip in the government. The Australian understands the government is examining ways to revoke or suspend the citizenship of hate preachers and foreign fighters, including Australians who have one or both parents born overseas, in a bid to tackle the growing threat of homegrown jihadists. Now, Peter Dutton will join us this morning, the Immigration Minister, to talk about that and other important issues. And there are some important issues to confront. And I'll share that with you in the first hour of the program. He'll be in our studios in Brisbane at 4BC talking to me, Mr. Dutton. I'm looking forward to that chat. It's a most important one. Speaking of important, there's a double-page spread in the Telegraph today in New South Wales. Cultural acceptance of violence against women is stopping female victims from reporting abuse in suburbs like Auburn, which is Sydney's domestic murder capital. Victims of domestic violence suffer in silence because they fear being deported or that their families will disown them, according to a New South Wales Assistant Commissioner of Police, Mark Murdoch. For people from some countries that come to Australia to start a new life, domestic violence is an accepted part of married life, he said. Their families and support networks subscribe to the view, and we know from talking to women in cultural communities that a woman might find herself a victim, and even her mother will put her aside and say, listen, it's part of being married, suck it up and get on with it. That's not the case of living in Sydney or living in Australia in 2015, says the Assistant Commissioner, and he's right about that. There's this story that is covered extensively in News Limited papers. The assistant principal of a school in Sydney's West has been charged with trying to incite a victim under the age of 10 to commit an indecent act. Homebush public school teacher Alexander Gollan, who's still employed by the state government. Now, what happens whether you're a teacher or a police officer? We have innocent until proven guilty, so they don't get sacked now. This happens in all cases. He's facing 14 counts of possessing child abuse material and using a carriage service to send indecent material to a minor. He was arrested last night by police at 6:30, questioned at Auburn Police Station. He'll face court on June 30. He's apparently an online blogger and activist. He told the Daily Telegraph last night he was a victim of right-wing conspiracies. Of course he is. Adding inappropriate material found on his hard drive was sent to him by his enemies in an attempt to set him up. A lengthy police investigation, which started October last year, ended with charges against the 32-year-old who devoted much of his spare time to writing anti-bogan, anti-discrimination and anti-racism material. I don't know if anti-pedophilia is also one of his causes. He once sold stickers and T-shirts espousing his political messages. Now, the Daily Telegraph can reveal today the police investigation allegedly uncovered videos of children dancing inappropriately and evidence of a conversation Mr. Gollan had with online with a young girl. Now, this is where it becomes a problem for me. The young girl is allegedly 9 years of age. Can any parent tell me what a nine-year-old is doing having conversations on the internet with anyone? You know, mum and dad, maybe, within the confines of their own home, but what's a nine-year-old girl doing having conversations with anyone on the internet? I mean, in my opinion, I might be a dinosaur, but I think it's a bit too young. In fact, I think it's far too young. Anyway, he'll be back in court in June, this bloke, Alexander Gollan. And thankfully he won't be, in the meantime, teaching. We go from him to the decision, speaking of such matters, on Brett Peter Cowan. 1:45 this afternoon, we expect the Court of Criminal Appeal to hand down a decision. Now, we had all the drama with the Chief Justice having to stand down after complaints. There's a front page story in the Courier Mail to him about the fact that he's suffering with chronic back pain, and the reason he's not working at the moment is because he's on medication and thought that may have impacted on decisions he was taking. So we'll see what happens with that. It won't happen in my program, but it'll certainly happen shortly after my program finishes. And finally, some common sense from the University of Western Sydney. We told you about this last week, where there was an address by a mob that should be outlawed, Hizbut Tahrir. Now, they were there addressing a group of young Muslim students from the Muslim Student Association at the University of Western Sydney. Well, the Vice-Chancellor, Barney Glover, who's written in the Telegraph today, has released a statement admonishing the Muslim Student Association for complying with Hizbut Tahrir's request for gender segregation at the group meeting last week, and vowed it would never happen again. The students were wrong. the representatives of the Muslim Students Association at the university's Parramatta campus made a mistake in requesting the segregation of men and women at a recent event. University of Western Sydney has never condoned gender segregation, and all of our students are aware of this. It will not recur at any future event on any campus by any student or community group. That was a backflip by the university, which last week defended the event, saying the radical group, which has been banned overseas and should be banned here, of course, was building social cohesion in our community. Anyway, that's good. That's good. It won't happen again. It shouldn't have happened in the first place. But you've got to ask the question, why have successive governments, dating back to John Howard, failed to ban this group? They're as mad as meat axes. I notice there's a story about, I think, Denmark banning them, or banning one of their speakers from Australia appearing there. Well, they should be banned here as well. They shouldn't be able to congregate because, as I said, they're as mad as meat axes. We don't want them here. Now, in sport, finally we got the news we all knew was going to happen. Daly Cherry Evans won't play for Queensland, and they confirmed that Michael Morgan had come into the side. And there's a battle between him and Dylan Napper, who's been named as 18th man for a position on the bench, I'd imagine. And they've been now worried about Billy Slater, who's got a shoulder injury, Queensland. So we'll wait and see what happens with him. And the New South Wales side ensconced at Coffs Harbour will be broadcast to via 2CS. Are up there at the moment. They've got some sort of fang-dangled monitor they're all wearing to see whether they're stressed or not. Well, I suspect it'll be off by the time they get there at about 8 o'clock next Wednesday night, and then we'll know whether the stress level is as high as it probably should be. The Football Federation of Australia, the FFA, has today announced the immediate termination of the A-League licence held by the Newcastle Jets, a subsidiary of the Hunter Sports Group. He didn't pay his bills, and Nathan's gone. He's talking about court action and all the rest of it, but I don't quite know what happens there because, obviously, he hasn't paid his bills, and as a result, I would think the FFA have every right to terminate his licence. And by the way, there's a game of soccer, an important game, at 6:30 tonight where the Matildas play Vietnam for the second time this week. They'll play a farewell match against Vietnam before the squad departs for the World Cup in Canada this coming Saturday. Ticket prices, if you're in Sydney, at Jubilee Oval, Cogra, $15 for adults, $10 for concession, $5 for kids, and $30 for families. So that's on. And their first game in the World Cup is against the USA, Winnipeg Stadium in Winnipeg. That's on the 8th of June, which is the Queen's birthday weekend, I think, from memory. So that's what's happening with the women's soccer team, the Matildas, bound for the World Cup. But one more game at 6:30 this afternoon against Vietnam, and that's happening down there at Cogra's Jubilee Oval. 6:30 start for that one. If you would like to join us, 131-873. Oh, by the way, I notice, well, on the back page of the Courier Mail, as the war continues. But they're getting some good allies in Queensland for their assault on the New South Wales side. One of the greatest 5-8s to play the game out of New South Wales, Brett Kenny, has said that Mitchell Pearce, in his opinion, is not up to Origin football and hasn't been in the past. Then he qualifies it, Brett, by saying, well, you know, he's playing much better than he has previously and maybe he can do it. Maybe he can silence the critics, including me. But it's all over the back page of the Courier Mail. One of the great 5-8s from New South Wales, Brett Kenny, saying this year's 5-8 in State of Origin, Mitchell Pearce is not up to it. We'll see whether Mitchell is up to it next Wednesday night, of course. You can call me on 131873. You can email me at 2gb.com, rayhadley.com, or 4bc.com.au. You can get podcasts, videos and program content by going to facebook.com/The Ray Hadley Morning Show. I'm Ray Hadley on 2GB, 2CC, 4BC and stations on the Macquarie Regional, Southern Cross and Capital Radio Networks. Now, I'm told on Ride Road, Lane Cove Road, a car has run out of petrol citybound after Lady Game Drive. So coming down the hill, a car's run out of petrol on Lane Cove Road, that'd be citybound or Ride Road, after Lady Game Drive, right-hand lane. So it's in a precarious position. Thanks for that, David. The time is 19 past 9.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for Australian Fleet Sales. Call 1300 used cars.
And the M5 is still rather busy eastbound near Belmore Road as you make your way down towards the main tunnel. Fairford Road, you'll find delays continue there from the M5 northbound onto Stacey Street into Bankstown. We still have lights out of Bankstown, Hume Highway and Beresford Road. At North Parramatta, a smash on James Roos Drive, taking out lane 1 southbound before Victoria Road. Haberfield, Parramatta Road, still very busy citybound around the Liverpool Road as you make your way in towards the Leichhardt area. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Fly to Manila one way for as low as $188 aboard the Philippines' leading airline, Cebu Pacific. Check luggage extra. Book now at cebupacificair.com.
By the way, there's been a very important raid by police in Sydney overnight, which I'll tell you about shortly, but six people have been charged with drug and firearm-related offences following a series of raids across Sydney. The strike force, with officers from State Crime Command, the Middle Eastern Organised Crime Squad, were joined by Tactical Operations Unit and also by the Public Order and Riot Squad and Region Enforcement Squad. Very serious charges being levelled against men aged 19, 24, 30, and then a 23-year-old, and as well males 17, 18 and 21. Firearms charges, a whole range of charges there, but very serious charges. It was a big operation last night by various sectors of the New South Wales Police Force. Now, just on Mitchell Pearce, I've actually got the headline in front of me now from the Courier Mail digital print edition. It's Mitchell with a wig on. Send in the clown. Blues great Kenny sinks the Bert. That's his nickname, Bert Kenny, into Cockroach Pierce. Send in the clown, it says. Possible 8-hour, 20 degrees, so the war of words continues in State of Origin. Possible 8-hour, and no Mal Meninga appearing in the sports pages of the Daily Telegraph. 20, Penrith 21, Liverpool 20, Richmond, Parramatta, Campbelltown, either 20 or 21. Now, they're saying for tomorrow, rain in Sydney, shower or two Saturday, partly cloudy Sunday. Brisbane, 26. Now, there was a bit of a pea super there this morning in Brisbane, I'm told. Showers developing today. It's cleared now. The sun has burnt it off, apparently. Brisbane Airport, 25. Ipswich, 25. Logan, 25. Winnemanley, 25. The Sunshine Coast, a little warmer at 27. The Gold Coast, 25. Early shower or two tomorrow. Possible showers on Saturday and Sunday and through to Monday. For the rest of the listening area, Canberra, shower or two today, maximum 15. Port Macquarie, Kempsey and Coffs Harbour, rain, rain and rain. 22, 21 and 20. Wagga Wagga, partly cloudy, 15. Griffith, a possible shower, 15. Goulburn, shower or two, 14, the maximum. Cooma, a shower or two, 14. Jindabyne, a shower or two, 11. Orange, possible late shower, 12. Bathurst, the same, 15. Lithgow, the same, 14. And Barrel, Southern Highlands, possible shower developing in 14. In Queensland, oh, before them, Mildura cloudy in 14, so pretty brisk in Mildura this morning. Maryborough and Hervey Bay, showers developing after a morning fog, 27 inland, 25 the coast. Townsville, possible morning shower, 30. Charters Towers, partly cloudy, 31. Toowoomba, showers developing, 18. Kingaroy, showers developing, 24. Charleville, rain at times, 18. Mount Isa, mostly sunny, 28. Same for Cloncurry. Longreach, partly cloudy, 26. Emerald, possible shower, 30. Roma, rain at times 18. Wallumbilla the same 18. Dalby, showers developing 20. St George, rain. Hope it comes down there for you. 17. Gundawindi, rain as well. And a little bit of rain at Cunnamulla and clearing out there. It's 20 degrees. It's 23 past 9. Bob sent me a net note from normally sunny Coffs Harbour. Say it's a wet training day for the boys here, Ray. Steady and cold. Not what they would have expected coming up here. 131873 is the open line number, 2gb.com. Thank you very much for that, mate. And you can join us via the internet as well. Did I say Townsville, did I? Oliver Ridgman from Toowoomba. Sorry about that. From Toowoomba. If I said Townsville, I do apologise. Obviously, I knew he's from Toowoomba. We've been talking about it all week, but I apologise. Immigration Minister Peter Dutton joins me every Thursday. Plenty to talk about today. He's in our studios in Brisbane at 4BC. Minister, good morning.
Good morning, Ray.
We often talk about the number of people who commit offences in Australia while in the country on a visa or here on other matters. Very serious offences, including murder, sexual assault and armed robbery. You're releasing some details today on exactly how many people the federal government have removed after they've offended while in the country. Can you tell us about that?
I can, and it's a pretty important topic because we have millions of people who visit here each year, and lots of them do the right thing, but there are people on visas who break the law, who commit serious crimes, and we've been cancelling visas at a pretty significant rate where we can find those people. So we've cancelled 450 visas since July of last year, and that's a 450% increase in the number of cancellations. And we've also been able to refuse about 100. Now, since the 1st of January, that means that 9 people convicted of sexually based offences involving children have been removed from Australia. 6 people have been removed who had been convicted of rape, 3 convicted of armed robbery, 2 convicted of kidnapping and 1 of murder. And so it sends a very clear message to people that if you're going to come here, it's a great privilege and most people do the right thing, but if you do the wrong thing, expect to have your visa cancelled and on your way out the door.
Mm. Just a question without notice specifically, and I don't expect you to have this at your fingertips, but a story that impacted on New South Wales, particularly in 2002, when a police officer, Senior Constable Glenn McAnally, was shot dead after pulling over a stolen vehicle at Hillsdale. Men were convicted over his manslaughter or murder. I spoke to the then minister in April of 2010, Chris Evans, from the previous government, about a grub named Modokai Taufahima. He was convicted not of the murder but manslaughter over Senior Constable Glenn McAnally. He was at the wheel of a stolen car being chased by Senior Constable McAnally shortly before his accomplice, Sione Pennacini, shot the officer five times through the windscreen of the police car. He was convicted of murder and he won't get out for quite some time. Modokai Taufahima and his brother John were both convicted of manslaughter. Now, Taufahima, Modokai that is, was eligible for parole in 2012. That was knocked back. And he was going to be deported to Tonga because he was not an Australian citizen. But Taufahima appealed to the Admin Appeals Tribunal, which overturned the decision because his seven-year-old daughter was born here after her father went to jail, and she's here. Now, that matter, when Chris Evans last spoke to me, and that was 5 years ago, was still up for review. Can you do me a favour, as the minister now responsible, and keep a very close eye on the murderers of Senior Constable Glenn McAnally when they do come out of jail in varying periods between now and, I think, 2029?
Ray, I'll have a look at the case. I remember that that murder. I mean, it was a shocking case. Mm. And we've strengthened the laws last year in relation to the character test that people need to pass. Mm. And I think it reflects these sorts of cases. And I think the public demands that if people are coming to our country, we expect them to do the right thing. If they're going to commit offences against our citizens or we believe that they have a lengthy criminal history that they didn't declare, mm. We're going to go through lots of those records and cases to see how we can cancel those visas. And as I say, there's been a huge increase over the course of the last 12 months and that'll go up even further.
Just so I can clarify it, even if the Admin Appeals Tribunal, the AAT, overturned decisions of the department, at the end of the day, it's your call, is it not, as minister?
There's a fairly broad ministerial discretion within the Act. Obviously, in certain circumstances, it's judicially reviewable, which is fair enough. Mm. The court should preside over these matters as well, but there is a comprehensive power there for the minister to cancel visas. Mm. As I say, we toughened the law up last year.
Mm. Look, on another front, we've got a network station, 2XL in Cooma. They contacted me recently, just after Anzac Day, to say that a man believed to be a Pakistani national was given an infringement notice after he spat on the Cooma cenotaph and then kicked the wreath. That was 2 days after Anzac Day, actually, the 27th of April. The matter didn't go to court because he was given an infringement notice as opposed to a court appearance. Can anything be done to people in those circumstances? People might say, well, hang on a second, he's not going to go to jail. He did something which was stupid, which was unpatriotic. If you're an Australian, if you're a Pakistani national, it's a different matter. But what could you do about someone like that? Because it is an offensive, given it was Anzac Day.
Well, I don't have the particulars of the case, but I think we expect, again, great respect for our national monuments. We expect people to conduct themselves in a way that is befitting their stay in Australia. And I think that's a very important principle. I don't think we should step back from it. So I'll have a look at the specifics of the case because...
I'll forward them to you.
Okay, thanks, mate.
And the problem will be we can't get the details of the man's name from police because of privacy issues and the like, but I'm sure that the federal minister could get them if we can't. Front page of The Australian, some promising news. I spoke yesterday to your colleague Andrew Nikolich from Tasmania, having served more than 30 years in the military and being your deputy whip now. He knows a fair bit about what he's talking about. He spoke about the need to change the Citizenship Act to revoke or suspend the citizenship of dual nationals who travel overseas. Now, The Australian goes a bit further today, saying the government is actively considering whether second-generation Australians could have that citizenship stripped, forcing them to take out citizenship in the birthplace of their parents. Can that physically be done without an Act of Parliament?
There's legislation required if there is to be change, Ray. There's an Act that I operate under, and there's a section within that Act that allows me to cancel or revoke some citizenships now, but essentially that's only if there's been fraud in the application for the citizenship. So the Prime Minister announced in his national security speech in February that we were going to have a look at the Act, the Citizenship Act, to see whether or not those powers needed to be broadened. And look, the principle for us that's very important is that we don't render people stateless. But if you have a look at the United Kingdom, since 2006, they've acted, I think, on 27 occasions, so it's used sparingly. But they decide that where somebody is involved in terrorism, in fundraising for terrorism, in training young people up to go and kill others, you've got to question whether or not that is in line with the allegiance and the pledge that they made when they took out their citizenship. In the UK, they go to the next step, and that is they say, well, even if you're born in the UK, right, if you can avail yourself of citizenship from another country because of birthrights, for example, that technically doesn't mean that you are rendered stateless, and that's operated in the United Kingdom with support from both sides of Parliament, and I think it's something that's worth having a look at. And as I've said, I think on our slot last week, that the government is having a look at all of the options in this space at the moment, because I can't hardly walk down the street without people saying, why do you let these people back into our country, come back more radicalised? They are a huge threat to Australian citizens. We should act, and that's what the government's doing at the moment.
Well, it's not often in the electorate, in the community generally, Minister, that you find people of one voice. But after Andrew Nikolic spoke to me yesterday, I didn't get one dissenting email out of hundreds from people saying, oh, at last. And when the Prime Minister spoke out and said, no, these fellows won't be coming back, the ones who want to come back at the moment, their lawyers are making representations and saying, oh, they want to come back, but they don't want to go to jail. And the Prime Minister said, no, if they come back, they'll face the charges of, you know, that have been put in place through the Terrorism Act of going overseas to fight on behalf of a terrorist organisation. And while it's a 25-year sentence maximum, you need to find a Supreme Court judge with the bottle to actually put them away for that long, but at least it would be some time in jail. Now, that brings me to this young man from your state, Oliver Bridgman from Toowoomba. Now, he wouldn't fall into the category of his parents being born elsewhere and he'd become a citizen of somewhere else, but I am becoming a little disturbed by everyone, including Oliver, deciding that they went there for humanitarian grounds and they're working as nurses and they're helping the poor and doing all this. How do we prove or disprove what they're saying, these people?
Well, Ray, it's pretty hard in the field of war, obviously, and we rely on intelligence reports. So Andrew Nikolic, who was a major general in the army, I mean, is an outstanding person, and he, I think, sums it up pretty well in relation to this. He knows how these people operate in Syria, in Iraq. Tens of thousands of people, including women and children, have been murdered by ISIL over there. And the people can pretend that you can go across there, then you don't like it, you can return home to Australia having been taught all of the techniques of warfare and conducting yourself in a way which would be a threat to the Australian people. People don't just walk back into our country with those sorts of skills. And we have the ability under the Australian law, if people go to a prescribed area, to charge them accordingly. And that's what people face when they come back. So we want to help young Australians, and we stop people at the borders. We've got our counter-terrorism unit officers interviewing and stopping people each day, collecting intelligence. But this is not a game. This is a serious battle that's going on. Thousands of people have died in the battle around Ramadi in the last few days, where ISIL have taken that town. This is a very serious matter, and the law enforcement and intelligence agencies will work with these people, interview them and make a decision about what will happen next. But the signal needs to go out to people that if you think you're going across there and embarking on some adventure, you should think twice.
Now, I note that Indonesia and Malaysia, on another matter, have done some sort of backflip on boat people after recently returning or turning boats back in their territorial waters. They're now going to let boat people come ashore temporarily, provided they're resettled within a year by external agencies. What does that mean?
Well, it's a tough situation, and nobody wants to see anybody drown at sea. We've had a very successful Operation Sovereign Borders, as you know, where we turn back boats where it's safe to do so. But we've also worked with other regional partners like Nauru and Papua New Guinea. But elsewhere, we're working with the Vietnamese, with the Indonesians, with the Sri Lankan government to make sure that we can try and stop the boats starting in the first place, so try and disrupt those activities. The Rohingyas are a very difficult situation because they're not recognised as an ethnic race. Effectively, people are fleeing into Malaysia. They have done for a long period of time. There's obviously difficulties with the way in which Thailand has turned boats around. It is a complex mess. We provide a lot of humanitarian support, and I think we should continue to do that. But our eye is firmly on the ball of making sure that we can continue to stop the boats here, because we've got smugglers right now, Ray, who are trying to fill boats in Southeast Asia, and that's our biggest priority at the moment.
Okay, a couple of other things we need to touch on. I know in Western Australia, a people smuggler copped the minimum of 6.5 years, which is about 4.5 years more than we give pedophiles in New South Wales. But at least in Western Australia, they're getting tough, the courts, that is, with people smugglers.
Well, and so they should be, Ray. I mean, this is a serious offence. 1,200 people drowned at sea during the Rudd-Gillard-Rudd years, 52,000 people on 820 boats, and we've successfully stopped that. But we don't want to see people drown at sea, and these people smugglers, whether they're crew or the organisers, are taking money from these families. In many cases, they're not making it to the destination, and we've made it very clear. If you come by boat to this country, you will not be settled in Australia, and that's why people are going to Nauru, going to PNG, going to Christmas Island, and we are as strong as we've ever been on that. And I think it's pretty disappointing, pretty amazing, actually, that Bill Shorten yesterday refused on seven occasions to answer the question about whether or not he would support turnbacks. If you take turnbacks away, we would have had thousands of people here over the course of the last 12 months, and the disaster of the Rudd years would continue. And I can't believe that Bill Shorten is going to give himself up to the left of the Labor Party.
Well, that's not the only thing he's not committing to. I can tell you there are many things that Bill's not committing to. The Sydney Morning Herald today claiming the Royal Commission into Child Abuse could end up investigating detention centres. The Royal Commission has reportedly issued formal notices to produce documents relating to children in detention. What do you know about that story?
Well, it's a rubbish story. Unfortunately, they haven't accurately reported that. As I'm advised, the Royal Commission's seeking advice about some instances from decades ago, and the department will comply. They'll provide whatever documents are requested, and they'll answer the question. So, but to suggest it's in relation to the detention centres today is, it's mischievous at best.
We spoke about Johnny Depp's dogs, Boo and Pistol, last week. You said you'd try and find out for me how they came to be in the country via the private jet and without a declaration, but that is neither here nor there. How do they actually get here without us knowing about it?
You need to give me another week or so, Ray. I think it's still under investigation. They're still asking those questions.
Boo and Pistol Gate hasn't been declared yet.
This matter is ongoing, as the police would tell you. It's being investigated. Handbags are being searched. It's no rock or backpacks being left unturned. So
I'm told that a member of staff brought Boo and Pistol in his or her handbag, as the case may be. Not that there's anything wrong with that. With the full knowledge of Johnny and his wife, that Boo and Pistol were... It's not as if Boo and Pistol jumped in the bag as they left Los Angeles and they said, oh, my God, what are those dogs doing there? Anyway, we'll see what happens next week. Now, a couple of things before I go. State of Origin, of course, you want to have a yarn about that. As a passionate Queenslander, I can understand that. But given that you've helped me with Albany Point, I think it is in your...
Albany Creek.
Albany Creek, I'm sorry.
Yep.
Okay, there's a suburb that we discussed in great detail yesterday on the Gold Coast. It's a little test I'm doing with Queenslanders from here on in. It's spelt Worongary. Are you aware of that suburb?
Yeah, you can go, if you're a southerner, you'd go Worongary or Worongary.
I can't trick you. I thought I had you there.
No, it's a trap for southerners. But I know you're diverting away from the state of origin. Spoken about the Australian, you've spoken about the Sydney Morning Herald. I heard a bit of nervousness in your voice before when you were talking about the back page of the Courier Mail where Dory's touched you up well and truly.
Well, it's a disgraceful assault on New South Walesmen by Christopher Dore and by his lieutenants.
Factual reporting, mate, factual reporting. So anyway, bring it on, and I guess...
Will you be there?
I won't be there. I think Parliament's sitting, which is...
take a little headset in with you. No one will notice if you put it in here and listen to either 4BC or the 2GB app, and you'll hear it. I'll be calling it.
I'll hear the call, and it'll be a fair call, no doubt.
We'll try and be as objective as we possibly can, a bit like the Courier Mail and the Telegraph at the moment reporting. They won't even mention Mal Meninga's name in the Telegraph down here. They call him XXX. But anyway...
Your conspiracy with Jonesy to try and... Mal out of that coach job and put him into the Australian job.
We're working on it. It's another way for New South Wales to advance the cause by getting Mal to be the test coach, and he said he'd do that as long as it was a full-time job. And on a serious note, and I am serious about this, and so is Alan, if there is to be a coach appointed and Mal Meninga wants the job, he's the only one that should get the job. Forget about everyone else. Mal Meninga should be the Australian Test coach, not only because he's done what he's done with Queensland, but would honour his fantastic playing and coaching career over a long period of time. It would be a great feather in his cap.
Preach the converted, no doubt.
All the best to you. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, mate.
That's the Immigration Minister, Peter Dutton, from the studios of 4BC in Brisbane. 131873 is our open line number, 2gb.com. Now, speaking of Worongary, as I wasn't, but I will... police are hunting for a heavily tattooed man after a house and car on the Gold Coast were peppered with bullets Now, they've named the bloke as Ryan Jemison. They've released his photo in connection with the shootings. They fear he may still be armed with a pump-action shotgun and have warned the public not to approach him. He's pretty easily identifiable. He's bald, young-looking face, and he's got tattoos all over the right side of his face and across his right eyebrow. Now, this incident occurred over the past 24 hours. He peppered a house in Wurrungri to start with, and then he went to Helensvale. He's described as being Caucasian, about 173 centimetres tall, 26 years of age. They say short brown hair, but there's no hair I can see, and extensive tattooing, including a fully worked covering on his right leg and up his right neck and across the right side of his face as well, for people listening on the Gold Coast, and that's a great concern to everyone. 131873 is that open line number. Speaking of Queenslanders, as I was, I told you when I was up there a fortnight ago, I came out of the hotel and ran into one of my favourite Australians, Noel Pearson. And Noel had been addressing various conferences that day in Brisbane, and he was standing outside the hotel and in a conversation with the gentleman. I didn't want to be rude, but I said g'day and then moved on very quickly. But the one thing I did say to him was, I love your hat, mate. If it has a pup, I'll have one. And he's photographed in the Australian newspaper today with the same hat on. It's very distinguished. Well, blow me down. I get here this morning and there's a hat on my desk with a note. Ray, mate, great to see you in Brizzy. You wanted my Akubra. Well, here's a copy of my Akubra. All the best, Noel Pearson. And he must have checked with Steve Keir and the team up at Kempsey on my hat size, because it's the right size as well. So, Noel, I owe you one, mate. I'll wear the Akubra in the fashion of Noel Pearson with great pride. Thank you very much, mate. 131873 is our open line number, 2GB.com. Click onto the feedback icon. It's 9:45.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for Australian Fleet Sales. Call 1300 used cars.
And just looking through the TMC cameras, Fairford Road, still rather busy northbound around Canterbury Road as you make your way under Stacey Street. At Bankstown, lights are blacked out, Hume Highway and Beresford Avenue. Take it easy going through there. M5, still rather busy eastbound near King George's Road as you make your way down towards the main tunnel. At North Parramatta, Workers Lane 1 closed southbound on James Roos Drive, just before Victoria Road. Now through Coffs Harbour, heavy rain has been falling. Slow down, put those headlights on. And west of Yet Home Roadworks on the Great Western Highway. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Amber Tiles Autumn Sale is now on. Hurry in for store-wide savings with 20% off everything. Sale ends this Sunday. Visit ambertiles.com.au for your nearest store.
I'm very happy to tell you that our job has been done in relation to this little boy, the six-year-old, who was refused the opportunity to play rugby league in Western Sydney because he has a vision impairment. And people in opposing teams and the Referees Association said he couldn't wear his goggles, which are made of plastic, covered in part by his headgear. So yesterday I asked Dave Trodden, the CEO of the New South Wales Rugby League, to intervene, and he has got back to me late yesterday to say, Ray, a decision has been made to support young Jack, I haven't named Jack before, playing with the goggles. Our football people will write to his parents advising them of the decision, but you're welcome to let them know if you're in contact with them. And there was a note from the Chief Medical Officer of the New South Wales Rugby League, and Dave Gibney said, my understanding of all of this is without proper visual aids, a sufferer would not be able to see well enough to compete in sports. The prescribed plastic visual aid goggles, especially if worn with the headgear, as shown in the photo, would appear to be an ideal solution. The main concern is they're a potential source of injury to the wearer or other players. This would appear to be highly unlikely, especially in the under sixes, of course. The view is supported by the available literature on the subject. I believe we should support this proposal for young Jack. And it has been supported, and for other children as well, which is a great result. And I got a lovely note from Jack overnight, handwritten to Ray, thank you for helping me. I can now play football in my goggles. So, fantastic. Ray, is your favourite team the Eels? Thank you. Jack, go para. No, Jack, it's not. I don't dislike them, but I don't follow any particular team. And then Jack has had a photo taken in his favourite Parramatta football pyjamas with his goggles on. And I know there's another little boy from the same club, Nine, who had similar experiences there, and this has paved the way for him to play as well, and for other little boys and girls in the New South Wales Rugby League who have vision impairment to play, which is just fantastic. And I want to thank Dave Trodden, and I want to thank Dave Gibney as well, the doc, for being able to report so quickly on it. And we'd heard from the NRL. They said, oh, it'll take a few weeks. Well, Dave Trodden and the Doc got it done within 4 hours. 4 hours they did it. Well done. Congratulations to all concerned. Look, speaking of Junior Rugby League, there's a matter that I'm going to touch on in the second hour concerning a club in the Shire, the Como Crocodiles. And it's about the health of little players being put at risk down there because of overflowing sewage whenever there's a flood or heavy rain in the area. And it's reported by Phil Rothfield last Sunday, and it needs addressing by the minister responsible, who's the Minister for Lands and Water, Niall Blair, and we need to get that done. The council down there don't have the funds to rectify it, but if we've got children playing in such conditions, the minister involved needs to spend it quick and get it solved. It's always interesting to get emails after interviews with ministers, and this one comes from Andrew at Blacktown. Great cutting interview with Peter Dutton. Good to see radio love-in still happen. You should have asked him what his favourite colour was. While Andrew from Blacktown thinks that, Jeff from Orange said, it's encouraging to listen to Peter Dutton. A breath of fresh air. We're in good hands in our future with the likes of Dutton and Morrison in government, particularly if they're to be our future leaders. I hope that's the case. Both men possess a clarity of views, strong determination, and a brilliant sense of balance in their views and decision-making. To listen to both men talk on your program each week is a great confidence boost to many, I'm sure, to hear that someone is finally trying to fix the mess we're currently in. Bravo. So, as I said, Andrew, it's all about opinions. Some count, some don't. From the Goulburn Post 2GN, a Christian brother has been committed to stand trial over five alleged historical child sex offences. On Wednesday in the Goulburn local court, William John Obbins, 69 of Ryde, waived his right to a committal hearing. He'll face five counts of indecent sexual assault against a person under 16 under his authority. He sat silently in court yesterday before the magistrate, Carolyn Huntsman. A break, some news, back with the second hour. And welcome back to the Ray Hadley Morning Show on this Thursday morning. 131873 is the open line number. We've got a truck losing the front tyre, Windsor Road, heading towards Windsor. Graham, whereabouts at, mate?
Out in front of the Edamoga pub, Ray. In the right-hand lane heading towards Windsor, his front tyre's come off his rim.
Okay, good on you, pal. Thanks. That's outside the Edamoga, and Macca's there on the corner. Near Maryville Road, I'd say. So, yeah, right hand. Thank you, Graham. Very good of you. That's Kellyville Ridge, I suspect, in the suburb. Truck lost the front tyre, Windsor Road, going out of town. And Graham was good enough to ring us and tell us about it. So just be careful in that right-hand lane. You're a good man. Linda, g'day.
Hey, Ray, how are you going?
Good, thank you, Linda.
First time, long time. just want to say I had a tyre blowout yesterday in between you and Guy Rail and Freddo.
Right.
And it completely blew out the front passenger side, and I was driving a motorhome. Anyway, the boys from Teeth actually put a caddy behind me for safety reasons and changed my tyre. So I just wanted to send a big shout-out to Jamie Brampton, who works for Teeth.
What, they're the boys working on the road, the new new highway?
Yeah. On the drill carriageway, so I just want to, it's pouring here today, so they're probably not working, but I hope somebody hears this shout-out, and it was, I would just greatly appreciate it.
Good on you, Linda. I'm sure the boys, if they're having a quiet one today, listening through 2MCFM, appreciate the fact that you've thanked them for doing what they did. By the way, a 6.9 magnitude earthquake has struck off the Solomon Islands, but no tsunami warning has been issued, which is good news. Queensland is officially, we're told by 4BC Newsroom, in economic recession, the Treasurer says. The Treasurer, Curtis Pitt, has told Parliament the state has not experienced any economic growth over the last two quarters. He said it's the first recession Queensland's experienced since 2009. Now, I mentioned this at the top of the show. It's a very important story. Just before I get to that, I mentioned before the news this Christian brother committed to stand trial over five alleged historical child sex offences in Goulburn local court. We're told by the Goulburn Post, William John Obbin, 69 from Ryde, waived his right to a committal hearing. He faces five counts of indecent sexual assault on a person under 16. Now, he had bail continued. His trial will start in the Goulburn District Court on the 24th of June, which is a Wednesday. Meantime, a fellow Christian brother, also charged with historical and sexual offences, and has his matter adjourned. Christopher Raffetry, 63, also of Ryde, appeared before the Registrar Bernadette Hilton yesterday morning in a joint application from the DPP and his solicitor, Mr Walsh, an adjournment was requested after outstanding material had been brought to the attention of the DPP. He's facing 8 counts, including indecent assault, 2 counts of committing an act of indecency, and 3 consequent or sequences of homosexual intercourse with a pupil. He was excused from appearing in person for the next date on Wednesday, July 15, but his bail was continued. Both men were arrested under Goulburn Strike Force Charish, established to investigate historical allegations of child sex offences at St Patrick's College in Goulburn. Now, this other story, which is a very important one. 6 people have been charged with drug and firearm-related offences following a series of raids across Sydney overnight. Strike Force DeWed, comprising officers from State Crime Command, Middle Eastern Organised Crime Squad, established in February of this year to investigate the alleged supply of prohibited drugs throughout Sydney. After ongoing investigation, Strike Force DeWed detectives, with the assistance of the Tactical Operation Unit, the TOU, arrested 3 males, 17, 18, 21, in a car park on Dunmore Street at Wentworthville. That's in Western Sydney near Parramatta. During a subsequent search, police found a loaded handgun and ammunition on the 21-year-old. This was seized. After the arrest, Strike Force DeWed detectives, as well as officers from the Public Order Riot Squad, executed 8 simultaneous search warrants at properties on Millers Point, which is in Sydney, Roselle, Arncliffe, Guildford, South Granville, and 2 in Canley Vale. The TOU assisted in the execution of the additional search warrants at homes in Hilltop Road at Merrylands, where 3 men aged 19, 24 and 30 and a 23-year-old woman were arrested. Police conducted extensive searches of these 10 properties, during which they seized and located amounts of methamphetamines, heroin and cocaine, a pistol, a sawn-off shotgun, ammunition and $100,000 in cash. A number of vehicles were also seized. And I'll repeat, it was the Middle Eastern Organised Crime Squad's job. 7 people arrested, taken to Fairfield, Merrylands, Parramatta police stations. The 30-year-old man was charged with supplying a large commercial quantity of prohibited drugs, 3 counts, knowingly dealing with the proceeds of crime, direct activities of a criminal group, shooting with intent to cause grievous bodily harm, discharging a firearm in a public place, and discharging a firearm likely to cause injury. He's refused bail. He's before Parramatta local court this morning. The 17-year-old male was charged with supplying a large commercial quantity of prohibited drugs, participating in a criminal group, discharging a firearm likely to cause injury. He's refused bail. He's in the children's court somewhere today. An 18-year-old man charged with supplying a large commercial quantity of prohibited drugs and knowingly participating in a criminal group. He's been refused bail. Parramatta local court for him as well. None of these fellows have been named, but we'll get their names shortly. The 21-year-old man charged with supplying commercial quantity of prohibited drugs, possessing unauthorised pistol, knowingly participating in a criminal group, refused bail. Parramatta local court today. The 19-year-old charged with supplying a commercial quantity of prohibited drugs, knowingly participating in a criminal group, refused bail to appear at Fairfield local court today. The 23-year-old man has been charged with knowingly participating in a criminal group. He was granted conditional bail. He'll be back before Parramatta local court the 8th of July. Following further inquiries, the 23-year-old woman was released without charge. The investigations of Strike Force DeWed are continuing. They're continuing as we speak. Now, try and figure this one out. This bikie that we've spoken about before, the Finks associate that we've spoken about, his name is Jason Trouchet. Jason Trouchet. Now, you might remember that I think that he was one of the people who pleaded guilty. He was fined $1,000 for his role in the Broadbeach bikie melee, which resulted in the new legislation that the Premier up there, Anastasia Palaszczuk, wants to take apart. He denied his association with the Finks, did not think the banditos who came looking for him at a local restaurant would go after him again. And then details of him being involved in this. His name is Jason Troy Trouchet. Jason Troy Trouchet. Well, Tiffany Genders has just sent me this one. Jason Troy Trouchet remains on bail. And this is from yesterday afternoon after I went off air. He remains on bail after his case was mentioned at the Downing Centre local court. The Finks associate was arrested earlier this month over a brutal attack on his partner in Zetland, which is in Sydney. Court papers reveal he's pleaded not guilty to 4 charges, including aggravated sexual assault, detaining and intentionally choking a person. It's understood Trouchet held his girlfriend captive before raping her, breaking her fingers and toes with a vodka bottle. The Queensland man was involved in the infamous brawl which sparked a statewide crackdown on bikies. How did he get bail for allegedly raping a woman, breaking her fingers and toes with a vodka bottle. Did he get bail for that? Anyway, he got bail from the Downing Centre local court in Sydney, the Queenslander. 131873 is that open line number. And this other story I mentioned, just the other side of the news, it relates to a football club in the Sutherland Shire in Sydney, the Como Crocodiles. Now, the story is written by Phil Rothfield on Sunday. The health and safety of hundreds of junior rugby league players are being put at risk at the contaminated home ground of the Como Crocodiles. Now, their oval in Sydney's south is really, really in poor condition. Now, when you get rain down there, particularly the recent storms we had down there, it left the playing field and old clubhouse in a condition that is considered a health risk to players, with raw sewage overflowing across the field. Now, concerned parents have already complained about their children picking up infections and, you know, because of the leftover stuff here after it does dry out. And then the canteen's in a disgraceful state. Now, the club, it's a Cronulla Junior Club, they're battlers. They went to the local council, and the council spokesman said, look, we're aware of the problem, but we've got no money in the budget to fix the field. So I thought, well, hang on, if they've got no money, Niall Blair, the New South Wales Minister for Lands and Water, wouldn't it be his baby as opposed to a council problem? So we put a call into him about this oval in the Sutherland Shire. And if kids are at risk and there is raw sewage which is coming out of the pipes which are controlled by the New South Wales Minister for Lands and Water, Niall Blair, well, I think it's up to the minister and his department to get the thing fixed, not necessarily the council. 131873 is our open line number. David, hello.
Yeah, hello, Ray. How are you?
Good, Dave. What's happening?
Yeah, mate. My granddaughter, Emily, got cancer. We organised some wood anyway to go down to Kellyville, Rite Trade Kellyville for her.
Right.
And while we're away getting the wheelbarrow pumped up and that, some lovely darlings came along with a car and a trailer and stole it. The 2 ton that we had there. So
what? So she's got an open fire at Kellyville. So the family, because she's having a rough trot, decided to give her some firewood.
We organised the firewood to be delivered.
Yeah.
They delivered as far as they could onto the lawn, which was a fair way up towards the house.
Yeah, and so while you go and get the wheelbarrow pumped up and organised, you're telling me someone comes along with a car and a trailer and pinches the firewood?
Absolutely, three of them.
What, three blokes?
Yeah, three blokes.
When did this happen?
Last Saturday, because we're going to bring her up because the tire power, like I'm Glenorryite, so we're going to come up and see
her. Oh, the continuous call team, yeah, but you had a problem. Yeah.
We're canvassing the area to try and see who might have seen it. Might have even seen them.
What sort of low bastard pinches firewood from someone's front yard?
Exactly. Anyway, we had to call the police because they lifted up the garage doors and had a bit of a look into, even through the tarp that we had over it in the garage, to wonder they didn't steal the tarp. But the Castle Hill Police Superintendent, Castle Hill, found out about it, knows that my daughter Jen and Peter, the husband with Emily, have been on a lot of things in the hills, raising money
as
we can for
a good family there. Yeah, sure.
And they arranged yesterday, we're actually down at the hospital with Emily at the hospital getting some stuff done with her, and laid me down. It arrived at 4:30 last night from Turtle Landscape. They had arranged between the two of them to just turn up at the door with 2 ton of firewood. Absolutely
so
fantastic.
You're telling me the boss at Castle Hill Police, the LAC, the superintendent there, who I have met, he heard about your family's plight. He obviously spoke to the local business Turtle, which I think Turtle are on Windsor Road there at
Kellyville. Yeah, they are. Yep.
And so they delivered another 2 ton of firewood, did they?
Yeah, they delivered 2 ton of firewood right up to the door for them. And it was just bad story, good story.
Well, you know what, David? It is a really good story in the end, but you can't believe that blokes would be hunting around to pinch things with a... Did it happen in daylight hours in a box trailer and a car?
9:30 last Saturday. Morning.
In the morning?
Yeah.
Well, you'd reckon someone would see these palookas in Kellyville. I'd appeal to anyone, you know, if some bloke's come home with a trailer full of firewood and you know that he's not the nicest person in the world, top him off, would you? Because the low bastard needs to be dobbed in.
Well, it's a fair trailer too, because 2 tonne of wood is a lot of wood.
It's a bit of work.
Absolutely. And the Hills Relay for Life was just down the road opposite the shop.
Yeah, we spoke about that.
They were there. We're gonna go there, then we're coming up to Taipau, because, you know, that's where we get our tyres from anyway.
Yeah.
And you had it going there, but...
David, as you say, bad news went to good news, and well done to the LAC.
Absolutely.
At Castle Hill, and well done to Turtle Landscapes.
Absolutely.
Good on you, mate.
Okay, mate.
All the best with your granddaughter, mate.
Your good work, too. I know you're involved in children's cancer as well.
We'll do our best, son.
Thanks, mate. Bye.
Thanks, Dave. All the best to you. Thank you. 131873. Stephen's ringing us from 4BC in Brisbane. Good day, Steve.
Yeah, morning. How you going, Ray? Just need to let people know, on the Gateway Motorway heading north, around the Belmont area, a kilometre before the old Cleveland Road.
Yep.
Exit. There's a truck there in the left-hand lane of the three lanes on the highway.
Heading north, eh?
Yeah, mate. He's broken down. He's got his cabin tilted forward. And I think people just need to slow down a bit, because it is a 100 zone and you don't see him until you come up over the ride.
So. You're a good man. Thanks, sir. That's what we want you to do. Let people know. Thanks, mate. Good. Very good of you. A broken down truck on the Gateway Motorway left-hand lane northbound near the old Cleveland Road for our listeners in Brisbane. And you'll get used to doing that for us. And our listeners on 2GB in Sydney do it all the time. Listeners in Canberra do it for us. We hear from people like we did earlier on the mid-north coast of New South Wales about things as well. 131873 is the open line number, 2GB.com. I need to get hold of Phil Rothfield pretty quickly, I think. There's a story that the Parramatta Club is facing a $500,000 salary cap fine. $500,000 salary cap fine. We'll get him on almost immediately. 131873 is the open line number, 2GB.com. Click on the feedback icon if you would like to join us. Pick up the phone, dial the number, and have your say. Well, this way I get buzz online, because it's a fairly important story. Look, that coverage I gave yesterday... About 3-3s, the sauces, tomato and barbecue, being dropped or deleted from Woolworths, has created a bit of a tsunami of correspondence from my listeners, mainly from Facebook. A lot of people in other parts of Australia are incensed by this. And I got a letter from, or an email from, a gentleman. He sent me a copy of a letter he sent to Grant O'Brien, the Managing Director and CEO of Woolworths. Mr O'Brien, at 54 years of age and having had Woolworths as part of my family history, shopping-wise, why is it we constantly see major companies such as yours kicking New South Wales farmers in the head? I write with utter disbelief that yet again we're now losing another great Australian company from your shelves, and that's the 3-3s. My family, and even as a kid, have always been able to enjoy 3-3s products. There wasn't a Christmas day that my late father didn't have 3-3s pickled onions among the savouries for relatives, friends and neighbours. I've now been buying 3-3s tomato sauce, mint jelly and pickled onions for as long as I can think of. One can assume that Woolworths does not support Australian farmers and companies. I may only be one person, but I'm damn sure there's more out there that will act with their feet and go elsewhere, such as Coles, who do stock the products, and IGA as well, who support those Aussie products. I seriously hope Woolworths can see the mistake in their judgment, reverse their decision, and restock the shelves with the 333 products, the 3-3s products, because I, for one, will be going elsewhere where they're sold. Well, I don't know whether he'll be reading that, the CEO, Managing Director and CEO, Grant O'Brien, but he should. And he should make a decision to reinstate it. And yes, they are an advertiser for the program, not frequently, but infrequently they advertise here. And as I've said before, the tomatoes that go into the tomato sauce come from Australia. The pickled onions that go into the pickled onions come from southeastern Queensland. The 3-3s mustard pickles, the ingredients there, come from the Hawkesbury Valley and have so for the last 40 or 50 years. Phil Rothfield, sports editor at large of the Daily and Sunday Telegraph. What have you got?
Yeah, big story breaking, mate, at the Parramatta Eels. We'll have it online, Telegraph website, in 2 minutes. I'm told the Eels are facing a salary cap fine, a really serious one, of up to $500,000. It'll happen today. The NRL will make the announcement later on. So, big drama at Parramatta. The integrity unit have been investigating them for several months, and this will be released, a $500,000 salary cap fine.
Well, Phil, this is amazing. I raised the spectre, not during the reign of the current board, of the previous board, Roy Spagnolo, of a whole range of players driving vehicles, not third-party agreements, but on the sly, that even a football, he's no longer there, but someone associated with the football club in a middle management position also was driving a car organised by the same company, and I'm pretty sure a current director of the club was working for one of those car companies at the time. So there may be some problems for him as well.
Yeah.
Do you have any other information on whether it's related to that type of thing or just cash payments?
Yeah, look, I think it's payments to a lot of the players. You remember Ricky Stewart cut about 14 players?
Yes.
What happened, they finished up at other clubs and Parramatta had to pay them.
Hmm.
Everyone knows that still has to be included in your salary cap.
Right.
I believe there's a car issue over Chris Sandow, the car he drives as well. So
Not the one he crashed the other day.
No, that was a mate's car, but his partner was driving. He's got a four-wheel drive as a club-sponsored car, which is part of this investigation.
Mm.
The fact that Willie Tonga, Ben Smith, Matt Keating, Chase Blair all left Parramatta to go and join other clubs, well, the Eels had to continue paying them. Now, that's the problem with their salary cap from last year. What'll upset people from other clubs and fans, and probably rightly so, is they were still able to sign Anthony Watmow, Kieran Foran, Bo Scott, probably the three biggest names, you know, that have been on the market, despite all this happening in the background, despite an investigation that's been going on behind the scenes at the NRL for several months.
Well, there is an out clause for Kieran Foran. I think you may have, one of your boys or yourself may have written this about the fact that if there is a bit of drama within the club, there's an out clause in his contract.
Well, the same as any player, mate. The date is June 13, which is the beginning of round 13.
Mm.
But, mate, for all the details, jump onto the Telegraph website. It's a big breaking story, and, it's up there now.
I notice you've gone light on Queensland today, eh?
Mate, I had a day off yesterday.
Oh, all right. Some respite for the Queenslanders. Can you give me a list of your days off between now and next Wednesday? So
mate, I have every Wednesday off, but I will work Origin.
Oh, you will work? Oh. Will you come out to the game?
Oh, I'll think about it.
Yeah.
What, do you want me in the box, do you?
No, I wouldn't mind you being in the box, as opposed to some corporate box where you invariably write about, you know, the hors d'oeuvres and the horsey stuvers and all the other things that you... I remember the days when you had a pie and a beer in your hand at the football.
Yeah, that's right. You've got to move on now sometime, you know.
All right. Oh, by the way...
listen, why when I come onto your show to break a story would you start bagging me? I'm helping you out.
You know the rules.
Yeah,
but I've done you a favour today. I'm trying to get hold of Niall Blair, the New South Wales Minister for Lands and Waters, about the story you wrote about on Sunday.
Yeah, down at Como. It's not a good situation, mate.
Shocking.
They've got about 26 teams of kids. So how many players is that? 10 aside. About 300 kids.
Mm.
And they're playing whenever it rains. There's raw sewage coming onto the field.
Yeah, another go. Oh, no, we'll talk to them. The council doesn't have the money, but it's really a matter, I would think, for the government, not for the council.
Yeah, well, the ground comes under the council banner and they're, you know...
Yeah, but sewage is the responsibility of state government at the end of the day. If it's raw sewage onto the ground, it doesn't matter who owns it, it's a state government problem.
All we want, mate, and all Como want, is a safe playing field and facilities for their youngsters. And I don't think that's too much to ask for.
No, all right. We'll chase it up probably tomorrow.
See you, mate.
Thanks, Phil Rothfield, sports editor at large of the Daily and Sunday Telegraph. So we've got a $500,000 fine being levelled at Parramatta for breaches of the salary cap, and they can ill afford that. 131873. It'll be interesting to see when it did happen, whether it's happened under the previous board and continued under the current board, which were recently returned, or it was under the previous board and stopped under the current board. I've got no idea, but until we get the full details in the Daily Telegraph, we won't know ourselves. 131873 is our open line number. It's 26 past 10.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for Australian Fleet Sales. Call 1300 Used Cars.
At Kellyville Ridge, a truck, he's broken down Windsor Road, taking out lane 3 outbound just past Old Windsor Road. One of his mates has actually pulled up in front of him, so we have two trucks stopped there on Windsor Road outbound. Now, Chippendale Rocks on Abercrombie Street, northbound near Cleveland Street. M5 still under speed around Belmore Road, heading down towards the main tunnel at Bankstown. Lights are blacked out, Hume Highway and Beresford Avenue. At Coffs Harbour, Maxville, Port Macquarie areas, heavy rain has been falling. Slow down, put those headlights on. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Honda's free-for-all is back. Hurry into your local Honda dealer for free rego, CTP insurance, extended warranty and roadside on selected CRV Series 2 models.
Luke has phoned me from St Peter's in Sydney. Rocks as big as bricks on the Princess Highway heading towards the airport. So obviously come off the back of a truck and dog, you'd imagine. Ray, on my weekly run to Canberra this morning, I listened to the podcast with Johnny Young. What an amazing life he's had. I didn't know all that you told until the interview. I only thought about Young Talent Time. Well, a mate of mine said to me yesterday he didn't realise that Johnny Young had written all those hit songs, including The Real Thing for Russell Morris and all the others. I think six number ones he's written as both a performer and songwriter. Police believe a 14-year-old Newcastle girl who has been missing for a week was chatting to older men on dating sites before she disappeared. Tara Hipwell was last seen leaving a Mayfield school in the Hunter. Officers have been looking for her online activity and concerned she was posing as a 19-year-old woman, which is a major concern. This one came from someone purporting to be in Lugano, but I answered the email and it bounced back to me, so I don't think they are. Ray, why are you so hung up on tarring all bikers with one brush? Do you do the same with footballers, Catholic priests or police? No, what I do is, it's not bikers, outlaw motorcycle gang. Bikies, not bikers. Okay? Please stop it. No, I won't stop it. I won't stop it at all, particularly when I read this one. Remember with these nine bikies, outlaw motorcycle gang members killed in Waco, and I also told you that the proprietor of the restaurant in Waco, Texas, where they all gathered, told police that he didn't want any involvement from them. Well, there's a good reason why. Police in the US have found more than 1,000 weapons hidden in a restaurant in Waco, Texas, where nine people died in the outlaw motorcycle gang shootout. The weapons tucked away in the kitchen area, the toilets, under benches of the Twin Peaks restaurant. They were left behind after a bloody melee that erupted after five rival bikie gangs went there on Saturday. The sergeant in charge said it goes to show the criminal intent. It indicates to the public that these are not clubs. These are criminal gangs that came here with the intent or anticipation of violence. The weapons include pocket knives, assault knives, AK-47 rifle and body armour. The arms were left behind among half-eaten hamburgers, half-drunk margaritas and beer bottles, covered with gang symbols. Five rival bikie gangs gathered at the restaurant and the fighting started with guns, knives and beatings inside. Then it moved outside to the car park. Police, as you know, have arrested 170 people, 18 injured, 9 dead. They've been charged, the 170 people, with various things, including engaging in organised crime in reference to the shootings at Twin Peaks, which is capital murder because of the number of people that were killed. And from 4BC in Brisbane, a committal hearing date has been set for two men facing terror-related charges in Queensland. Omar Zachary, 32, and Agim Cruzi were arrested in a series of counter-terrorism raids last year amid accusations they were preparing for incursions into war-torn Syria. 3 days were set aside in September for a committal hearing during a brief mention of their cases in the Brisbane Magistrates Court today. Our reporter there, Johanna Marie, was in court this morning. She says the pair have been remanded in custody, which means it'll be almost a year in custody before a magistrate looks at the evidence against them. So there was no application for bail either. They remain in custody. 131873. The Mayor of the Sutherland Shire, Kent Johns, is phoning. G'day, Kent.
Good morning, Ray. How are you, mate?
Not bad. I suspect you're ringing about Como, are you?
Yeah, mate, just a bit of a background. Just to update people. Look, it is an issue, and it's a long-term issue. It's been around for years, and that club should have been upgraded years ago.
Mm.
But we're doing everything we can to make sure it's safe for the kids and safe for the community. We're working with Sydney Water. I've also got our inspectors down there over the last week. They're having a look around to see if sewage is coming into the club, what we need to do to fix that if we have to.
Just before you go on.
Sure.
You're seeing if sewage is coming in there. From the eyewitness accounts I've had, there can be no doubt. Now, my problem, and I don't have a problem with you blokes trying to do your best with limited resources, but surely if there's sewage coming in from, you know, pipes that are owned by New South Wales Water, isn't it their problem to make sure the sewage doesn't leak onto a playing field that's inhabited by small children?
And that's what we're doing, mate. We're talking to Sydney Water today, yesterday and all the last week. They're trying to find out if there's an issue. I'm taking them at their word because, you know, they work very well with us and they're saying that it doesn't appear that it came from them, but it's a massive flood area there, Ray.
I've been to the Oval, I know that.
Yeah.
But if there's sewage, and it's, I mean, to be perfectly honest, Kent, it's pretty easy to determine whether it's sewage when it floods because you see the matter floating past you. I mean, it's not, you don't have to be a scientist.
No, a rocket scientist.
To say, well, look, that looks like, oh, yes, it is.
If it's toilet paper, it's toilet paper, right?
Thank you. So, look, the water minister has just phoned while I'm on the air to you, Niall Blair.
Yep.
He'll come on tomorrow to talk about it. But at the end of the day, I know it's in a flood area, but if it's all, I mean, floods are one thing, and they're bad enough for people to combat, whether it's a playing field or a home. But if it's also in concert with sewerage, raw sewerage, well, that's a matter for Sydney Water, and they need to make sure that when it does flood, it doesn't bring with it raw sewerage.
Yeah. No, I just wanted to ring up, mate, and assure you that, you know, whatever we can do to fix that problem, mate, I will do it. Yeah, there's no excuse for it to happen. But what we are, we have people on the ground now trying to work out the best way to fix this problem, and Sydney Water is helping us with it.
Okay, well done. Thank you, Kent Johns, Mayor of Sutherland Shire, south of Sydney. 131873 is our number. It's 24 to 11.
Macquarie National News.
Thank you, Erin.
Good morning, Ray. Immigration Minister Peter Dutton has revealed the government cancelled 450 visas since last July for people who've broken the law or committed a serious crime. The Reserve Bank says consumers are still getting slugged by excessive surcharge fees levied by merchants on credit card payments. A public rally is being held in Brisbane today to protest against CSG mining. It's being led by Independent Senator Glenn Lazarus. And declassified documents found in Osama bin Laden's Pakistan home reveal he was pleading with followers to stay focused on attacking the US instead of being dragged into Muslim fighting. In sport, as we've heard, the Parramatta Eels are facing a $500,000 fine for allegedly breaching the salary cap. Ray, more news in about 23 minutes.
Thank you. Well, one of our racing aficionados who listens to the program, Daniel, says, Ray, some racing news. Those who are waiting to back Alan Jones's horse, Hampton Court, you can stop waiting because the horse is off to Spendthrift Thoroughbred Stallion Farm in Lexington, Kentucky, to stand its first season at stud at $11,000 a service. Let's hope it produces some good ones. Well, thank you for that, Daniel. I didn't know that. You told me something I didn't know. 131873 is that open line number. 2gb.com. Click on the feedback icon if you would like to join us. 22 to 11. It's good to have your company. 131873 is the open line number. 19 to 11 on 2GB, 2CC, 4BC and stations across the network. A close friend of Cardinal George Pell says he'll cooperate with any requests made by the Victorian Royal Commission into child sexual abuse. Meet calls with Cardinal Pell to front the hearings currently being held in Ballarat. Greg Craven from Truth, Justice and Healing says he expects his friend to be compliant. There have been claims Cardinal Pell had been involved in moving a known paedophile, ignoring a victim's complaint and bribery. While it's not known whether Cardinal Pell will be called as a witness, Mr. Craven said the Royal Commission had a few options, including asking him for a statement or to appear via a witness video link. In a statement today, or yesterday I should say, Cardinal Pell acknowledged the accusations but described the claim as false and misleading, as we did report a little bit earlier. 131873 is the open line number if you would like to join us, 2gb.com. I spoke about the comical digital image of Duncan Gay in tandem on a push bike with Clover Moore yesterday in the Daily Telegraph. The New South Wales Roads Minister is online to talk about this cycleway that somehow will get you from the eastern part of Sydney down to the airport. He's on the line. Minister, good day.
Good day, Ray.
I didn't think you liked them, Duncan. What's that? Yeah.
Look, I probably got a bad rap on cycle lanes. I've never said I don't like them. I don't like the ones that are in the wrong places. And, you know, I have kids and grandkids that use cycles. And if I can put them in sensibly and join what's there sensibly, I will. But where there's one in the wrong place, you know, for example, the one in College Street in Sydney, we said we'd remove it, and we are removing it because it's exactly in the wrong place. The problem at the moment is where it's retrofitted that it hurts businesses and communities. That's where we need a lot more care. But if I'm building a new road and there's a chance to link some that are already there and remove bikes from the road, you know, one of the annoying things.
Now you've got me. Now, let me just go further here. You're saying remove them from the road. Now, this one you're talking about, a shared path running along the western curb of Wentworth Avenue, connecting to the shared path running along Botany Road, a separate path across that bridge via a clip-on structure, the Alexandra Canal, a cycle path on the southern curb line of Mar Street to connect the existing Eve Street cycleway to the southern bike bridge on the same bridge, the Baronetti Bridge. But, you see, this is where we have a problem. If you go to the airport like I do, or come back from the airport on a Saturday morning having called the football, Sydney Airport, there's the peloton chasing the lead bike heading south, of 50 or 60 cyclists, and they're entitled to be there. I'm not blowing about that. But then if I get out on the M7, where one of your predecessors, I think Carl Scully, even though I argue with him about it, spent $40 million on a cycleway, which turns out to be, he was right, I was wrong, it's a really good cycleway, but guess what? The cyclists don't want to use it.
Yeah,
they want to go on the M7 and compete with the trucks and cars doing 100 k's an hour.
Yep, yep. It just doesn't make sense. It fails the common sense quotient. We want to protect them. They're asking to be protected, and I'm trying to, wherever I can, sensibly do it. Yet some of these guys want to go out and be hairy-chested and fight with the traffic no matter what we've done. Now, that's something that I need to address separately.
Well, before we get to the one at the airport, and if I'm in one way at the airport, it's okay for me because I'm going up tonight and coming back tomorrow night, so I've only got one little backpack. I can ride my push bike here from Piermont out there. But if I'm going away for an extended holiday, I'm not going to get the luggage on the Melbourne Star. But before we even get to that, what can you do then? And these are people who want to be fit, and they want to be healthy, but they put their lives at risk on the M7 every day. What are you going to do to get them off the M7 and off the M2? Off the M2, and I encounter them of a morning in the dark, and they're legally entitled to be there. I'm not blowing about that. They're legally entitled to be there, but they're competing with cars and trucks doing 100 k's. What are you going to do to get them off the M2 and the M7 before you even start thinking about the one to the airport?
Yeah, well, first of all, on the airport, we're not putting it there for people to put the Globite on the back and cart it in and go there. It, as you said earlier, it links the others, and there are a lot of people, there's 6,000 people that work at the airport, and a large number of them want to actually ride to the airport. So
you're not talking about the captain of the 737 for Virgin Australia, one of our sponsors, jumping on the Speedwell to get to work, are you, or the baggage handler? Poor buggers get there that early, it'd be too cold to get on the back of a push bike.
Yeah, some of them actually do it. I can't imagine you or I or Max the Axe would be doing it. But,
well, he's retired, Max, so he doesn't have to do it.
Well, he might in his spare time do it. But back, I'm not shifting away from the question that you asked.
Well, you're doing a good job of it, but keep going.
No. I'll always go back. It is a concern. I haven't got an answer for that one. One of the things that we are doing is putting together a roundtable to look at the issues of identification, stroke licensing, adhering to rules, getting a better safety outcome for motorists and cyclists, which is something that's coming up within the next month and a half. So during that's one of the things that we would do. Guys in pelotons that want to bunch up and widen the peloton are silly, there are also drivers that tend to be aggressive, as we've seen.
No doubt, and there are people facing charges over that. And I'm not saying that anyone's breaking the law here. What I'm saying is that it puts them at grave risk. And what I still don't know what you've said about the M7 or the M2. Will you look at, and let's concentrate on the M7. There's a cycleway parallel to the bloody road.
Yep.
Why are they on the road, and why can't you get them off the road?
I don't know. I don't know why they're still on the road because...
Well, what can you do to get them off?
Well, I have powers, ultimately, but I don't know what the rules off the top of my head. I don't know the rules on that. But I'll certainly, as part of what we're doing, go away and look at it because you need some common sense. There isn't an alternative on Southern Cross Drive, and it is a good run heading down to Wollongong. And I've got to say, I drive Southern Cross Drive a fair bit. Most of the guys on there are pretty well behaved these days. That aggressive pelotons that were there aren't there at the moment.
No, look, I don't have a problem with them being there. In general terms, I just worry about their safety. I'm not dirty on them. I'm not trying to play cat and mouse with them. I'm letting them do their thing and I'll do my thing. Yeah. But not everyone's that reasonable. I'm just worried about their own safety. One gets clipped and the other 22 come down over the top of him.
Yeah, and why, your question's a fair question. Some of them wearing dark clothing. Why are they out there mixing it with the traffic when they've got a safe alternative, which is a good ride?
Well, and that's back to the M7. All right, okay. Did you like what Paul Whittaker did to you yesterday?
No, it was disgraceful. disgraceful. I think Clover will probably sue before me. I'll have to take
Well, the one thing I would be saying that you should have been behind Clover.
Yeah.
Because from my estimation, I don't know too much about tandem cycles, but I think the person at the back does the donkey work.
Yeah. Well, look, I've got to say, I've got to be gracious because Paul made me look a bit fitter than I probably
yeah,
am.
Yeah, that other bloke's body doesn't fit your head, I'll tell you.
and a couple of, well, last week he did as well. He took about 20 kilos off me and made me look like Mel Gibson. And I can't complain when he does that.
All right then. Okay, well, the answers are pineapple. We'll see what happens. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure. Thanks.
Duncan Gay, the New South Wales Roads Minister. Now, Glenn's phoned me from the M1. There's a four-wheel drive on fire just before the Wyong Road exit, northbound, left-hand lane. So that's going out of Sydney on the central coast of New South Wales. Thanks, Glenn. Four-wheel drive on fire just before the Wyong Road exit, northbound in the left-hand lane. So take care in that particular area. It's 10 to 11.
On the Ray Hadley Morning Show, traffic for Australian Fleet Sales. Call 1300 Used Cars.
And with that car fire in the M1, northbound lane 1 is closed, about 1 kilometre before Wyong Road. All emergency services are there, so just take it easy going through that area. Mount Coringai to Barara, the M1 Pacific Motorway, lane 3 closed, northbound for work. At Bankstown, lights are blacked out, Hume Highway and Beresford Avenue. M5 still rather busy around King George's Road, down towards the main tunnel. At Cecil Hills, debris on the M7 southbound near Elizabeth Drive and west of Yet Home. Roadworks on Great Western Highway, speed down to 40. This is Ian Wallace for the Ray Hadley Morning Show.
Starting tomorrow at Freedom, NRMA members save up to 30% on full-priced items. But hurry, ends Monday. Simply show your NRMA membership card at Freedom and save. Conditions apply.
One of three northbound lanes on the M1 blocked with that car on fire, Wyong Road at Mardy. Motorists should drive with caution. Ray, I challenge you to go on the M7 cycleway around 7:30 Saturday, Sunday morning and tell me no one's using it. No, Wayne, I didn't say no one's using it. I didn't say that. What I said was people still use the M7 when it's available to them. That's what I said. Rick says, on suburb pronunciation, Malvern Star is pronounced Malvern Star. Well, it depends on where you come from, mate. If you're in South Australia, it'd be Malvern Star. If you come from the western suburbs of Sydney like I did, it's Malvern Star. It's spelled M-A-L-V-E-R-N, Malvern, as in Malvern Star. Graham says, Ray, your serious athlete bike rider will not use the bike path. These guys want to do 40 to 50K. Mixing on the bike path with other recreational cyclists is not good. Well, it's not as bad as travelling with a truck doing 110Ks, mate, and they will do it if it's made illegal. Nick says, as a former employee of Sydney Water, I've always found that most people get sewage and sewerage mixed up. Sewage is the stuff. Sewage is the network of pipes. You're a good man, Nick, reminding me of that. I should have remembered that. Sewage is the stuff, so it's sewage that's spilling out from the sewage pipes. And sewage is the network of pipes transporting the stuff. Thanks for clarifying, Nick. You're a good man. Ray Hadley in the morning on 2GB, 2CC, 4BC and stations on the Macquarie Regional, Southern Cross and Capital Radio Networks. News in 60 seconds. And welcome back. Finally, the Ray Hadley Morning Show on this Thursday morning. 131873 is the open line number, 2gb.com. In New South Wales, the Minister for Emergency Services, David Elliott, wants to thank volunteers who helped save lives and houses during the recent storms. I guess this is extended, David's the Minister in New South Wales, but I'm sure that people across Australia recognise the great work of the SES. But in this case, the Minister said the New South Wales SES and other emergency services workers had been outstanding in the immediate aftermath and was impressed with the recovery effort. Well, I know in Queensland, they're greatly indebted to what happened during that flooding on that Thursday where the test match was cancelled, of course, and we had lives lost there. But the SES, all volunteers, just absolutely fantastic people who do a remarkable job. 131873. One of my listeners at Borkham Hills in Sydney, put it all like Sweden and Germany, Ray. No vehicle which is not made to go faster than 30K. Tractors, pushbikes and mopeds. They can't go any faster than that. I don't know about you out west, says Dennis from Rose Bay, which is in the eastern suburbs of Sydney, but in the eastern suburbs it was always Malvern Star, not Malvern Star, as the case may be. 131873 is the open line number, 2gb.com. Click on the feedback icon if you would like to join us. In the meantime, love the program up here in far north Queensland in Weipa. I don't know any cyclist could enjoy riding down those motorways. It's bad enough riding motorcycles around cars and trucks at the same speed. They need to be off those motorways and use that $40 million cycle track that's parallel to the M7. Well, the point being made by someone else, I know that's how they feel. I think it was Graham, who said, "Your serious athlete bike rider will not use the bike path. These guys want to do 40 to 50. Mixing it up on bike path with other recreational cyclists is not good. I used to ride the city from Glenfield long before there were cycleways." Well, that's good, Graham. I'm glad that you're fit and healthy. But I repeat, it is not fit and healthy to put a cyclist on a road like the M7 where trucks and cars are doing 100 Ks. It's just not particularly, I don't care whether they want to do 40 or 50, when there is a purpose-built cycleway that runs parallel to the M7 for 40 Ks at a cost of $40 million. 131873. From the Harvey Bay Chronicle, an accused Harvey Bay drug trafficker has been granted bail because it might take 8 months until the Maryborough Supreme Court can hear her case. Jodie Marie Bailey, facing numerous charges including drug trafficking after being arrested in February as part of the Fraser Coastwide police operation. Miss Bailey applied for bail in the Brisbane Supreme Court yesterday. The court heard police identified Miss Bailey during an operation that was targeting a different alleged drug dealer. Between October 1, 2014 and December 13, 2014, Miss Bailey allegedly ran a trafficking business dealing in small amounts of meth. Ice, that is. The court heard she sold between $500 and $1,200. Police tapped her phone and claimed she used code words to run her alleged drug business. She'd been in custody since she was arrested February of this year when police operation ended. Justice Peter Flanagan heard Miss Bailey had a long drug history, maybe behind bars for a long period, if not bail, because of the lengthy time it'll take to get the matter to the Supreme Court back in Maryborough. Due to the lack of Supreme Court sitting in Maryborough, there could be a delay of up to 18 months. The Crown Prosecutor Will Slack said he was concerned Miss Bailey posed a risk of re-offending. Justice Flanagan said regular drug testing would detect any return to drugs and cause her to come back to jail. On that basis, he granted her bail. Now, just on another matter, a review has started to create a streamlined police oversight system. And this is from Troy Grant, and it's long overdue. It's something I've been talking about in New South Wales for quite some time. Keeping police accountable while allowing them to perform their jobs. The Acting Premier and Minister for Police and Justice, Troy Grant, has announced today the terms of reference and welcome former Shadow Attorney General Andrew Tink AM to begin the review this week. The review delivers on election commitment by the New South Wales Liberals and Nationals. Mr Grant said Mr Tink will report back to the government by August 31 this year on how to create a world-class transparent model of police oversight. The quote from Mr Grant is this, a former policeman himself: "Policing is one of the most difficult and confronting jobs, and police decisions and actions can have life-changing consequences for the community and the officers involved. Currently, there are no less than 7 agencies that have some form of police oversight function." Now, the 7 he refers to, the Police Integrity Commission, known as the PIC, they have oversight. The Ombudsman has oversight. That's 2. Professional Standards, that's 3. ICAC, Crime Commission. What are we up to now? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And there are 2 others, according to the minister. So he says, the community and police need to have confidence in a strong, effective system that upholds the highest standards of behaviour and integrity, but allows police to get on with their job. The terms, and by the way, in reference to some of these agencies, anonymous complaints with no basis, in fact, are investigated and the officers are interviewed. I mean, someone rings up who doesn't like the bloke, or lady as the case may be, and says, oh, this bloke did this and this bloke did that, that lady did this. Just doesn't make any sense. The terms of reference for Mr Tink include considering and reporting to the government on options for a single civilian oversight model for police in New South Wales, which I think is in operation in the UK. Any gaps in the current police oversight system, best practice models from around the world, including the UK Independent Police Complaints Commission, which I spoke about, and recommended model for police oversight, including guidance on its design, structure, cost and establishment. Well, if that's the case, that would mean the PIC goes, they go, professional standards, they go, that's 2 gone, and I guess the Ombudsman can no longer investigate police, that's 3 gone, and maybe the ICAC, that's 4 gone. But that'll be up to Mr Tink. Consultation will involve police oversight and law enforcement agencies and the community via the New South Wales Government's Have Your Say website from today. So well done, making good on his promise. Sean, g'day.
G'day, Ray. How are you going?
Good, Sean. What do you want to say, buddy?
Mate, I'm a serious cyclist, and I live... My house basically backs onto the M7 bike path.
Right.
And I refuse to ride on the M7 because it's far too dangerous.
Oh, God bless you for some common sense.
And I know quite a few riders who are national champions who won't ride on the M7 bike path. That will ride on the M7 bike path rather than ride on the road because we've all got families. Mm. You know, it's a gift to us because it's an 80-kilometre bike path that I can travel on without going anywhere near a car.